Oh, body image. Before you turn this episode off, I would encourage you to listen till the end. And here's why. I feel like body image is one of those things that rears its head and it impacts us, affects us in ways that we don't even realize sometimes. It can impact our confidence and the way that we approach relationships. And of course, it could really impact the way that we approach the table or really any time that food is involved. And of course, it looks different in different seasons of life for us. I feel like sometimes we experience it stronger and more than others. But it's always been really interesting to me to hear people in the media like Oprah and how she has fought this and dealt with this her whole life. And so it's worth having a conversation about. And I think that in this episode, you'll hear me talk about seasons where I found myself spending more time in the kitchen than others. And I had to really reflect as to why that was. And it was to avoid the table and to avoid situations with food because of certain ways that I perceived myself, things that I wanted to eat and didn't eat, and I didn't want it to be recognized. I think that this is something that a lot of us have to put into check and really evaluate, spend time to think about and talk through. And there was no one better to have this conversation with than Heather Creekmore. Heather Creekmore writes and speaks hope to thousands of women each week, inspiring them to stop comparing and start living. The host of the internationally popular Compared to Who podcast, she has been featured on Fox News, HuffPost, Morning Dose, Church Leaders, and For Every Mom, along with dozens of other shows and podcasts. She was a contestant on Nailed It, the hit Netflix Bake Fails show. Heather and her Marine fighter pilot turned pastor husband, Eric, have four children and live in Austin, Texas. Learn more about her and her new book, ImproveBodyImage.com. Her newest book just came out. It is a workbook to walk people through overcoming body image in 40 days. And wow, is it a gold mine. Guys, listen till the end of this episode. You will be so thankful that you did. Without waiting any longer, here is my conversation with this week's guest, Heather Creekmore. Hi, I'm Katie, a hospitality educator and the host of Making Room by Gather podcast. I am set to see our communities get back to the table through hospitality, but it wasn't always this way. My husband and I moved to Thailand, and through it, I experienced some loneliness. And with it, I was given a choice to sit back and accept it or to do something about it. And for me, that meant two things, that I needed the healing to learn how to accept an invitation and the confidence to know how to extend one. Through this process, I developed some of the richest and deepest relationships of my life. Through Making Room by Gather, you will hear conversations from myself and experts in the areas of food, design, and relationships. You see, there are countless things trying to keep us from the table. But can I tell you something? Take a seat because you are ready. You are capable. You are a good host. I am always looking for ways to make healthy delicious. And if you are anything like me, you are too. Which is why I love Core Eats. Core Eats is passionate about good, wholesome, and healthy food that everyone can enjoy. Their paleo, keto, vegan-friendly mixes are free of gluten, grain, dairy, refined sugar, and hidden preservatives. They take the guesswork out of baking and make it so simple. Whether you're looking to make bread, muffins, brownies, or even pizza, their mixes are easy to make, versatile, and sure to be loved by everyone. They give freedom to eats and treats, and you are going to love it. They are a pantry essential. All of the flavor, none of the yuck, fast, easy, delicious, and healthy. That is Core Eats. If you're looking to add these mixes to your pantry, head on over to coreatsmixes.com and use promo code GATHER to receive 15% off your order of your own mixes. Let's be real. Life is better with a whole lot of muffins and a whole lot of brownies, and now you can have your health and your treats without any of the guilt and with all of the ease. Core Eats at coreatsmixes.com with code GATHER for 15% off. So today we are going to be diving into all things body image. And before everyone turns the episode off, because I feel like sometimes people hear body image and they're like, no, it could be a trigger. I want you to stay here till the end, because I think that there is really something for everyone here. I'm really excited to learn from you, hear from you, and really start with your story, because I think so many of us can relate to one piece of it or another. But I would love for you to start on how you ended up here. And so what I mean by that is, what in your life led you to have the desire to write, teach, and lead in the area of body image?
So what you really mean is, why are you crazy enough to talk about this stuff that none of us want to talk about? That's what you really meant, right?
Hey, someone has to. I'm glad it's you.
You know, and I mean, that's really how I feel. Every time I do this, I'm like, really? I'm doing this?
Good.
So my story started in elementary school. I remember having those feelings that my legs were larger than the legs of other little girls. And that led me to do what mom did, which was diet. And so by middle school, I was doing whatever diet mom was doing. By high school, I decided I was better than dieting and would see how long I could go without eating. Now, I'm a little old. It's like the early 90s, late 80s. And there were only two categories of eating disorders back then. And so I wasn't anorexic. I didn't have an anorexic, like, quote unquote, looking body. Now we know a lot more about anorexia, and that's no longer an accurate stereotype. But, and I wasn't purging. So I didn't have bulimia in the traditional sense. I think eventually I developed exercise bulimia, but that wasn't even a thing back then. And so I had this full blown eating disorder. I lost my period for 9 months in college. And anyway, all to say that my eating disorder, which I didn't know I had, body image issues, just like kind of constantly having a conversation in my head about how I needed to change my body to look better. And I don't even know that I was aware of it, because it was just so constant, you know, yeah. A couple times an hour, like, what did I eat? What should I eat? How did I exercise? How much more do I need to exercise? Those kinds of thoughts. So anyway, that I can go deeper into that if you want, but that was my story until I was in my 30s. And it wasn't until I was in my 30s that I recognized that my body image problems weren't really about my body, that I was trying to fix how I felt about my body by fixing my body to look a certain way. And so that kind of led me to start talking to different groups about body image stuff. But still, when I knew I wanted to write a book, I was like, I will never write about that. That stuff, you don't want to commit that to paper. Like, I don't want people to know the secret thoughts I had in my head around these issues. And I just had a really hard time getting started on my writing journey. And my husband the whole time was like, I don't know why you're not writing about body image. And so fast forward about 10 years ago, I wrote my first book on body image, and it was released in 2017. And that started a whole new world of podcasting and coaching women and, you know, really going all in talking about body image issues. So that's kind of how I got here.
One of the reasons I really wanted to have this conversation, and others kind of like it, is because when we're talking about getting to the table, obviously the table usually equals food. And whenever there's the table, whenever there's food, there's a lot of dynamics across the board, but especially when it comes to body image and everything under that umbrella. And there's a lot of shame, and people either don't gather because they're worried about comments, or they don't know how to navigate it. And so I hope that today's conversation gives some freedom, but also some language.
Yeah.
And like you said, permission to talk about it, because I think even as you were talking about the eating disorder range and scope, so a part of my story is an eating disorder as well. I have never heard the term exercise bulimia. And I think some of this stuff will either give language to things that people experience or get them curious to learn more. So don't shy away from this conversation, you listening. stay with us, because it's well worth having. I wanted to jump back for a second to you hopping onto whatever diet your mom did. I'm curious if you are comfortable talking about this. Was that something encouraged by your mom? Did you kind of do it without admitting it secretly?
It definitely wasn't secret. It's so tricky because, like, looking back, I don't think there's any way my mom would have been putting me on a diet per se, right? I wasn't necessarily like an overweight child. And yet there was something, I want to give it this language, which might kind of sound funny, but it was like something about learning the ways of a woman.
Yeah,
right?
Something I could see
about it. Like this is how women must be. And so if you learn these ways to relate to food, and really maybe a little bit of that was like learn it early so you don't have to do it when you're my age kind of thing. Yeah. So it was a part of like my education into like adulthood. I probably had more dieting conversations with my mom than I ever had conversations about puberty or sex or getting my period, right? Like these were the conversations about what it meant to grow into being a woman. So yeah, I don't know if that directly answered your question, but.
No, it does. And I think that probably makes sense to a lot of us. Like I didn't necessarily live during this time, but my mom told me there was a time where Entenmann's, you guys have Entenmann's?
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Where it was like the fat-free stuff and it was the craze. Everyone was eating it because it was fat-free. And that was kind of a conversation. So there, I feel like as a culture, we're always hungry to like pursue health. Yeah. It's just, it looks different in different times of culture. And then there's the fine line of obsession and healthy knowledge, right? So she did what she knew to do to some extent. That's what I'm hearing.
Right. Yeah. And I would say to kind of piggyback on what you just said, right? Like, I think it's time for us to kind of pause and say, are we really pursuing health when we are following all of these fads? Because as you just mentioned, the Entenmann's, I mean, my college roommates will tell you that I kept a half gallon of fat-free frozen yogurt in our freezer. And I lived in the 1990s, I lived on plain bagels and I sprayed butter on it because real butter, whoa, that had too much fat in it. Fat will make you fat. And then I would eat fat-free frozen yogurt. Like that was my, you know, path to health. And then I laugh now as I think about 2012, 2015, like that era when I was trying to follow a more South Beach Atkins keto kind of plan. And I remember standing in my kitchen with a stick of butter and like a pile of nuts and some coconut oil, like trying to make something called a fat bomb that I was supposed to eat to make me skinny. So it's like we have been on this wild goose chase around what we've been told is healthy eating.
Yes. Yep. And I think a lot of us feel like we're maybe tired of hospitality or whatever, but I think we're using so much emotional energy when it comes to body shame and body image that's the problem, right? You know, right. And a different conversation needs to happen. So good. Right. Well, so in our culture right now, as we're kind of touching on, I don't know how many of us see it this way, but body image has really become an idol for a lot of us. I think it's really what we're saying. Another word might be fixation in many of our lives. Do you believe it was always this way? Do you think it's because of an increase of social media? What's your take on that?
I think it's always been this way. I think it's more obvious now. We've got more like direct places to point a finger at now. And I certainly think that especially young girls have it harder in a way because of the amount of images that they can see every day and, you know, and how filtered these images are. But I think something within us was designed to crave beauty. Hmm. And then I think we live in a culture that maybe more so than ever equates beauty to value. Hmm. And so it's almost like, actually, there's a documentary. It came out a few years ago. It's really kind of difficult to watch, honestly. But it's a woman who looked at teenagers in the 90210 zip code. Okay. So affluent teens in Beverly Hills. And she followed them for, I want to say, 20 years. And her thesis in all of that was that when you are affluent, when you have enough money, your concerns can kind of go to a different level. And so what she saw was like, they didn't have to worry about anything like physical needs wise. And so what they could obsess over was their bodies. Right. And I thought, you know, just as a culture, right. And for your US listeners, like we have it pretty well. Most of us aren't strong. We know where our next meal is coming from, and we have the great privilege of deciding what that next meal will be and what things we'll eat and what things we won't eat. And like, but is it only because we are so comfortable and so affluent that we are able to kind of take it to the next level of stressing about these things? And I'm not saying that's a good thing, stressing about these things.
Yeah.
But I just wonder to what extent in our affluence, we have gotten away from, you know, like I love how you talk about hospitality and coming to the table, right? Like I don't know if you followed any of the longevity stuff that's come out recently.
Yes. Wait, but zone? Do you mean like
the blue zone? Right.
Yes. I'm so interested.
Mm-hmm. But the community aspect of that is always there, right? And I remember watching the documentary, and he's talking about, I think it was the Blue Zone in Central America. I can't remember which country it was, but, and I don't want to guess wrong.
No, I know. I can't think of it either. I'm drawing a blank.
Mm-hmm. He was talking about how they ate squash, corn, and beans. And those were the only three foods they ate. Mm-hmm. And I kept thinking, but I was told, like, I'm going to die at 50 unless I eat something green every day.
Yes.
Right? And these people are living to 100. And so just thinking about this element of we've got all these food rules coming at us, eat this way, be healthy this way. And are we so uber focused on that, that we are missing coming to the table? We are missing community, which really is where we can derive health and life and joy and energy and happiness and all those things we really desire. Like, have we believed the lie? And like you said, the lie of the idol or our ideals is what I like to call it too. It's like this image we have in our head that if I looked like that, then I would be free. Then I would have joy and peace and happiness, and I'd be able to rest and not have to worry about this anymore. And it's such a lie, because where that is found is not in getting a perfect body or having a perfect diet. It's found in community. It's found in our faith. It's found in these real, genuine things that last.
I want to make sure I'm articulating this the way that is in my brain. Postpartum does that to you, but
get it.
I'm trying to wrap my mind around this. So I think that there is a level of this that we buy into. We see images, we see diets, we kind of make a choice consciously or subconsciously to accept it, live by it, receive it, right? Do you think that there is conversation or verbiage as a culture that also projects an expectation? Here's what I'm trying to get at. Like, are there phrases or conversation types that are maybe happening at our table that make people feel like you have to fit in this box? Is that making sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I live in Austin, Texas.
Okay.
And I would say that we're kind of like, I don't know, my husband lived in San Diego when he was in the Marine Corps, and he thinks Austin and San Diego are very similar.
Oh, wow.
But we're pretty focused on health here. And this is a pretty highly educated area.
Yeah.
And so it's almost as if, like, if you are not eating in a certain way in a group of people, it's as if you are not as smart as everyone else, right? Like, oh, you must not be informed.
Wow.
Oh, uh-huh. You must not know that gluten is bad. And I actually, in my new book, I jokingly referenced, and I don't think it was on purpose, but I was speaking to a group of women here, and I broke open like the crunchiest, and I don't mean crunchy like with nuts. I mean like granola, crunchy, healthy.
Yes.
I broke open like the crunchiest brownie looking thing I'd ever seen. And two little bugs crawled out.
Oh my gosh.
This is where the health trends are going. I'm out.
Yeah. Oh, that's so funny.
But and it is like I'm reading stuff about how we should start eating bugs, and you know, and it's like, oh boy, has that come? But I do think that we have so much information.
Yeah.
Right. And it's coming at us in our Instagram feeds, through YouTube, like everywhere. And then, like I referenced earlier, it is changing, right? Like just watch. Like low carb is going out. Like carbs are coming back. And I had a guest on my show talk about how there's only three macronutrients, right? There's protein, carbohydrates, and there's fats. And our bodies can only go without one for so long before they're like, I need that. And I mean, anyone who's gone on any kind of restrictive diet understands that personally. But culturally, right, we keep just kind of shifting through these trends. And to your point, it is uncomfortable to not be following everyone's diet, to not be following the, you know, well, everyone knows this is healthier plan of whatever the year, the decade. Yeah. It's difficult to be in that position.
There are all those jokes. My brain is going 10,000 different directions because it's just such an important conversation to have. I'm so glad we're finally having it. But there's all those jokes like a vegan, a CrossFitter, and a something walk into a bar, ... And you heard about it in the first 3 seconds. Like, and just so everyone knows, I am not ragging on those people. I just wanted to repeat the joke. But there is something about food and diet types that becomes a form of identity, right? And I think it becomes very comfortable for people to talk about. I don't know, it goes so many different directions. I didn't necessarily tell you I was going to ask this, but I'm just curious if we could spitball a little bit. Like, maybe I did tell you, but so here's where I want to start with this. I realized recently, as terrible as it is, that I referenced weight type conversations more than I wanted to. And I was like, oh my goodness, this is not where my heart is. This is just kind of like maybe trained conversation that I'm finding myself in. What are ways that we could maybe bring this to people's attention, create some accountability to change table and relationship conversations away from food? Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Well, because I think the problem is we have believed, and I don't necessarily believe this anymore. I would have believed it for most of my life, but we have believed that food equals health. Food equals body size. And over the last 10 years that I've been working with women, like I'm meeting women that have larger bodies that barely eat. Right. And you would look at them and you would be like, oh, she's, you know, she overindulges is probably what like culture would say. It's like, no, that's not true. Like, and so we have to disconnect those things.
Yeah.
Right. Of course. Right. Of course, there's like, you know, I think a lot of us who have a dieting background, we're kind of black and white thinkers. Yeah. Right. And so it's like, wait, if food doesn't equal health, then you're saying I should sit on the couch and eat Cheetos all day. No. Like that's an extreme. I'm not going to the extremes, but I think disconnecting those two concepts, right? And like we referenced earlier with the blue zone, right? Health, yes, okay, eating well to nourish your body is going to make your body feel good, of course, right? But when I was, and I'm going to use another kind of eating disorder term here, when I was, I would say almost orthorexic. Yeah. So orthorexia is a new category of eating disorder. I don't know if it's technically in the manual yet, but it's where you're uber focused on eating clean.
And I'm sure we know people in our lives like this, right? And I'm with you. I've been through seasons like that too. Yeah. It's like an obsession.
Right. Anything that is not pure according to the standard of whatever way we're eating is unacceptable. And when I was more in that camp, when I was trying to just keep my diet very clean, like I think according to culture standards, I should have been my healthiest. And when I was exercising my quote unquote best, that's when I was diagnosed with my autoimmune disorder and my thyroid issues. And it was a shock to me. It was almost insulting, right? Like, no, you don't know how well I eat. You don't know how much I exercise. And so I think there's a wake up call that it's not necessarily do X, you get like Y and Z. Like, we have some control, but not all the control that we're told that we have to, you know, manipulate our health through food and exercise. And then back to that longevity stuff. Boy, if we are focused so much on manipulating our health through food and exercise to the exclusion of being in community, to the exclusion of, I mean, I didn't eat dinner with my family during those years many times. Like my kids are still shocked if I sit down and eat breakfast because breakfast was not a thing I did. So to the exclusion of spending time with people we love and building relationships and new relationships. And, you know, I mean, I work with clients every week who turn down dinner invitations, who turn down party invitations because they're afraid they want people to eat something there. And it's, we're prioritizing the wrong things if we believe that our food is the key to our health.
This is all so good. I want to jump back really quick. So we're at a table with someone, we're at the park, sports game, whatever. Conversations about weight, someone's own or someone else's weight comes up. Do you think it would be a good strategy to maybe turn the narrative and talk about someone, another attribute of that person?
Yeah.
Is that a good kind of like practical approach?
Absolutely.
Because like I said with myself, I didn't even realize that it was something that was so constant that I talked about,
right,
you know, and I think people just don't know and we need to start a new type of conversation. But go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Right. No. And you just reminded me that I didn't actually answer that part of your question.
No, you're fine. It's all so good. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, I think we need to have conversations where we are saying in kind and loving and generous and gracious and understanding ways where we are saying, you know, like, hey, do we really have to talk about other people's bodies? Do we really have to talk about our own bodies? Isn't there something more interesting about us? I mean, I remember overhearing a woman tell her, it must have been her boyfriend, like everything she'd eaten in a day. We were at dinner somewhere and they were kind of like, the table was super close to ours. And I remember listening to that thinking, like, that is like, that guy has to be bored out of his mind. That's like the lamest conversation ever. And then I thought, oh, but how many times have I done that? I mean, I remember getting on the phone with my then boyfriend and saying everything that I ate through the day. So like shifting our conversations away from, boy, can't we talk about something more interesting than our bodies and food? I mean, it does feel like no matter what circle I'm in, if it's a circle of women, that's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
And I think we do have to be bold and change that. Like there's other more interesting things out there to talk about.
I wonder what it would feel like for some of us to hear that from a friend.
Mm.
Like if we're the one that shows up always talking about weight and you had a friend, kind of like you were saying, the key to this is the graciousness, the gentleness, the love, right? Right. It's not accusation and reprimanding, right? It's, but if you listening as a friend, maybe gauge the situation, but were to tell someone, I would love to hear more about this. Like that is far more interesting to me than the weight journey. I think as I look back at my life, I've talked about this a few times. There have been certain words spoken over me that have really led to freedom and change. And so I don't know, this could be just some food for thought for us. Maybe we can be that friend.
Yeah. Right? Well, even just saying something like, you know, what I really love about you has nothing to do with your body. Love how kind you are. I love how thoughtful you are. Like that birthday gift you got me was super thoughtful. Like I love that about you. Whether your body changes, how your body changes, because guess what? We're all aging. So there's no choice. Your body is going to change. Like that doesn't matter to me. That's not what I love about you. And it's not why I love being with you.
Man, really good. I love putting language and actionable things to conversations like this because it's easy to hear this and be like, oh, that's a good thought, but now what? And so now we have, just a little bit of wording to put towards it. So as we're talking about this, I would imagine that most of us fall on a spectrum here. Like some people would say, yes, I'm crippled by this kind of thought process. Other people might say, oh, I only experience it once in a while. One way or another, I would imagine it affects our relationships. I know we talked about it a little bit, but is there anything else that you want to say to it? Like I know you gave the example of some of your clients won't accept an invitation because of how they perceive themselves or anxiety. Do you want to dive into that a little bit further, maybe?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, as I think back on my journey, I think about the opportunities I missed for fellowship, for relationship, for community, because number one priority was I had to get to the gym. Right. And so there, just on that fact alone, it was like, oh yeah, I would love to do that, but that's the same time as spin class. So, you know, spin class is going to win. So there was that element to it, but also, you know, I first met my husband. It is really a miracle that I'm still married today, going on almost 20 years, because when I first met my husband, I was so entrenched in these issues that I couldn't have even named or identified. I mean, he had no idea like who he had married in this sense. And I really believed that getting married was going to fix some of these issues for me. I believed that as soon as I had a man to say that I was good enough physically to marry, then I would stop struggling. And so part of my kind of belief system was that marriage fixed body image issues. And boy, was I wrong. Marriage made them worse. And so in our early years of marriage, I was constantly like, you know, like, what are you doing wrong? Because you should be making me feel better about my body. And this is on you. Like, you said I look nice. No, that's not good enough. You have to say I look the best. I was the most beautiful. Like, I was crazy. Like, you superlatives. I'm grateful.
That's relatable.
That we're still married.
Yeah.
But it does. I think, let me say this very gently. But when we're caught in these issues, and like I said, I was there. I didn't realize I was there. When we're caught in these issues, we're caught in thinking about ourselves all the time.
Yes.
So we approach every relationship really only able to think about ourselves.
Yeah.
And maybe just a teeny tiny bit of capacity to think about others, but most of it was not, what do I think about you? Or how can I love you well? It was, what do you think about me? And how can you love me better?
Yeah.
And as I coach women now, I talk about like shifting from, instead of walking into that room filled with other women, you know, the scenario we've all been in, you're wondering if you're dressed the right way for whatever you're going to walk into. You're wondering what the response will be. But instead of walking into that scenario, wondering what will they think of me, walking into that scenario, being intentional, thinking, how can I love them well?
Wesley is almost 6 months old and I cannot believe it. It's really amazing how all of a sudden we kind of feel like we're in this new routine and rhythm as a family. Now with that, I feel like I have more space to create, but not the space that I had before. Now, because of that, I need some help to focus, some help to be creative. While I definitely am someone that loves my coffee, we all know that too much coffee gives you the jitters and actually becomes more of a problem than a help. And so I knew that I needed something else to help me, and that's where I turned to Magic Mind. Magic Mind helps me to focus, be productive, and more creative without the jitters, without the crashes, which I definitely need. I'm not looking for more trouble in my life right now. I need more of a solution. Magic Mind gives me more clarity. It actually helps sleep better, reduces stress and anxiety, all of these things that both Colby and I need as we focus the season of postpartum and entrepreneurship. So you might be wondering, what's in this? As someone that loves health and really values the cleanest of ingredients, I don't want anything artificial, no artificial colors or sweeteners or flavors. So it includes matcha, ashwagandha, lion's mane mushroom, and everything that is going to support your health and your focus without any of the nasty side effects. You actually might have already heard about Magic Mind. Joe Rogan and the Kardashians are drinking it. And now we are too. It's the same thing, right? Colby and I totally stand behind Magic Mind and a bunch of our family members too that have taken it since we have started drinking it as well. And we would love to invite you to try it for yourself. You could head on over to magicmind.com/Katie, KAYTY, and get 56% off your subscription. Guys, 56% off your subscription or 20% off a one-time purchase. That's magicmind.com/Katie, KAYTY, or code Katie20, KAYTY20 at checkout. We cannot wait to hear what you think.
Like, who do I notice is kind of on the sidelines, who just really needs someone to pick her out and ask her how she's doing? Like, how can I focus on the others? And then it's so crazy what happens when we do that, because then you leave and you're filled up. You're energized. You know, you had a great time. But if you walk into that same scenario, like, what do they think of me? No one commented on my outfit. Uh-oh, do they not think I look good enough? Do they think I wore the wrong thing? Do they think I look fat? Like all these thoughts that we leave kind of downcast, like, oh, bummer. I'm going to have to do better next time. So even that little shift, I think, changes the way we relate to people and can actually be healthier and encouraging for us too.
I keep jotting down notes and I'm at like 50 at this point, but like, a few years ago, I'm trying to remember how old I was. Beth Moore wrote that book that just blew up, So Long Insecurity. Okay. It's been
a while,
but it's been a very long time, but I remember she talked in that book. And I remember there was all like those conferences surrounding it and all of us, right? We all went to it. I was a teenager, I think. And how did she word it? Like the root of insecurity is pride, the root of
maybe
or something. But I remember hearing her connect pride and insecurity. And I was so offended. I was like, I am not prideful. I am not. Right. When we really stop and chew on that, the amount of emotional energy that is spent, right? Like consumed with body image and the next meal and all that. How can we be intentional? How can we be consistent friends? Because we're so stuck in that cycle, right? And so I think that's a really important thing for us to evaluate, maybe even once a year in our own hearts. Like, you know, is that, you know, rearing its head again? Because it's so, what's the word I'm looking for? Sly? Like it.
Yes.
It sneaks in and we don't even realize it. And I've been talking a lot about like, if you struggle with friendship, it might be this. It might not be your hospitality skills or your cooking. Those could be great. Mm-hmm. It could be this. And I think it's important for us to evaluate this too. Like maybe it's the, again, I want to say this kindly, like the absorption, right?
Right.
Right. I also wanted to, go ahead. No, you could talk to that.
Well, I was just going to say that you've probably heard the expression that hate isn't the opposite of love. Apathy is. I don't know if you've ever heard that before. It's not my phrase, but if you think about like self-hate and self-love, right? Like it's easy to identify the person who is like narcissistic, right? Like it's all about them. I went out on a date with a guy in my 20s and everything was coming back to him. And I was like, okay, now we're done. This is a one date only thing. But it's the other side of the same coin when we are stuck in self-hatred, right? So it's like, it's not the opposite. It's still that, like you said, self-absorption that keeps us stuck. And what I believe and what I write about, what I speak about is that our freedom comes in self-forgetfulness, not in self-neglect, right? Not in apathy, not in I don't care, because I think that's a wall some of us put up too. Like, I don't care what they think of me. It's like, well, you do. You just kind of have that wall built high. So you're trying not to let it hurt. But it's the self-forgetfulness. It's the I'm going to think of others before I think of myself. And I, you know, that's hard because we think about ourselves a lot. But we're just trying to keep the focus off of me is so freeing.
Another thing I wanted to be sure to remember is to the talking specifically to the host, to the person listening that's like, I'm great at relationship. I'm great at having people over. I remember, so I struggled with my eating disorder when I was, I don't remember when it started, sophomore year of high school. So my high school years, I was in my church youth group. We went on a lot of retreats and I always ended up in the kitchen and everyone was like, wow, you have the gift of hospitality, which I do. I know I do, but I really feel like things got skewed because my goal in being in the kitchen was to control food, was to not have to eat in front of other people and was control. And I think a lot of us, who find ourselves stuck in the kitchen, not enough time at the table, have to evaluate all of this too, because it's something that can be praised. It's often seen as a good thing. Wow, you're always serving. You're always in the kitchen. But again, with the motive, we have to question our motives. And I remember, man, it almost gives me a pit. My stomach makes me cry and whatever. One of the the youth leaders at this retreat was like, Katie, okay, enough time in the kitchen. Come sit down. We want you to sit down. And it was such a tension in my heart because it's so beautiful to be wanted. But I was like, I felt like so much was going to be exposed. But it was the start of a new narrative. Yeah. And so I don't know if you've experienced that in your own life or other people, but.
Absolutely. I would rather host a party than go to a party because if I'm hosting, I'm busy. Yeah. It gives me a little bit of a protective, you know, wall from just having to talk to people. And that's something I've worked through. I mean, I still have to fight that. Okay, Heather, why do you want to always be busy and you have some activity to hide behind? It's a real thing for sure. Yeah, and
there's probably different reasons for all of us, but mine was food. Like the busyness protected me from having to deal with, I don't know, all the food and body conversations. And so, just another thing, again, for us to just consider, you know, it's, I'm not saying that all of us applies to all of us.
Absolutely.
But it's important. Wow. Well, I would love to change the conversation here a little bit and talk about it in a little bit of a brighter light, but let's change the script a little bit. For people that are listening, thinking, okay, I could definitely relate to this. I would love change in this area. What are action steps they can make towards change?
Yeah. So I mentioned this earlier, but body image issues are not about our bodies, right? And most of us are doing what we're told to do, change your body, right? Become a after picture and then you won't have body image issues is kind of what the commercials are telling us. But I think action step number one is recognizing, oh, wait, there is nothing I can do to change my body that will be enough to fix my body image issues. And if you don't believe me, and it's hard to believe me, I do get it, but think about the reality that Taylor Swift struggles with body image issues. If you watch the documentary, you saw that unfold, right? Like all of these supermodels, celebrities, Carrie Underwood has mentioned, I have this set up as a Google alert. So every time a celebrity says she has body image issues, I get an email about it and I get one a day, right? So these women that we are told, if you looked like her, you wouldn't have body image issues, still have body image issues. So step one is recognizing this isn't about your body. The next diet, the next fitness plan, you know, the next surgery, none of these things are going to fix what is really bothering you. It's an inside job. There's something inside that needs to change. And then the second thing that I would have people do, and I work with women around doing this, is we really have to start listening to the narrative in our head, right? And a lot of times I would characterize the narrative as lies, right? But for most of us, we've heard these same things about ourselves for so long that it's hard for us to call them lies right off the bat. Most of us are like, we're kind of anxious to agree with the negative things that we hear. You're looking in the mirror, you hear, you look fat. And it's like, yes, I do look fat. You're absolutely right. And we agree with it and we proceed as if it is truth and, you know, decide our actions from that prompting. And so what I have women do is really to start identifying, what are you hearing? Like, let's write it down. And this is really the first step in my workbook. Write down what you're hearing. And it's hard to write it down. You do not want to commit that to paper. Like, that's a really difficult step not to be underestimated. But once you start writing it down and you can see, oh, wow, like in the course of a day, I hear these 20 different things, these 20 different negative things about my body. And then we go on a journey where we talk, well, where did these come from? And sometimes it's funny, like it'll be like, well, this boy in the seventh grade told me that. It's like, do you know where he is now? You know, you're in your 40s. Do you know where this boy from the seventh grade is now? No, I have no idea. I don't even remember his last name. Okay. But you're still letting that one phrase he said to you that one day is still affecting your life at age 45, at age 50. Like, let's break the power that it has over you. And so that's where we start, but it's an inside job and it's a journey.
Wow. Again, so much there, but I've often heard that, you know, like when we get all of these words on paper, or if we were to admit the thoughts that we say to ourselves, they are never things that we would say to anyone else.
Right.
Or my gosh, you'd get fired from a job or you'd lose friends. Like if you talked that way, it's brutal. Right. Right. I'm curious. Words of affirmation is definitely one of my love languages, so I probably need this more than the average person. But is seeking truth from other people a part of the process at all? And here's why I ask that. So little things like postpartum journey. I am losing so much hair and I am very, very aware of it. And I mean, we're looking at each other now. I clearly have hair on my head, but in my mind, I'm bald. And I have had people say things like, just, you know, out of the blue, your hair is so beautiful. And I'm like, whoa, really? And it kind of, it comes against the lie. It rewrites what I'm hearing in my head. So I don't know if that's just like a cherry on top or if that's...
I think that's the cherry on top, right? Okay. Because I think it's a dangerous...
I can see where you're going.
It's dangerous to set it up where it's like, I get my value from other people noticing things about me, right?
Ooh, good.
But I do think that there have been times in my life where I've just felt, oh, and had like that Target employee tell me that I looked beautiful. And it's like, what, where did that come from? Right. So I was like, okay, thank you. That was just like a nice little cherry on top. But really what it's got to come down to is that I am not going to define like whether or not I am good enough, where my value comes from, based on the opinions of other people, because the opinions of other people are always going to change.
Yes.
And sometimes they're going to like me in red and sometimes they're going to tell me that red is not my color, right? You know, it's so fickle. What I like to kind of take this even a step further, right? Culture talks a lot about my truth, right? And I think especially for listeners that you have that like ascribe to faith, for listeners that are Christians, right? I think sometimes when we think about our own bodies, we're tempted to believe my truth. Like, I think this about me. I think I am, you know, too fat and too short and all the things, right?
Yeah.
And so we try to cover my truth with what other people say, others' truth. Like, no, you are not too fat. Oh, no, you're not too short, right? But really what we need to do is remember God's truth.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
and that God's truth is truer than my truth. And
so good.
I have to decide if I'm going to listen to God's truth or if I'm going to listen to my truth.
And it's steadier, right?
It doesn't change.
It doesn't change. I think what that goes to show, though, is we all carry a little piece of this and it might look different, right?
I do think there is some degree of, and clinically, I've researched this around ADHD and done some kind of, I don't have firm research there, but there's something called rejection sensitive dysphoria.
Okay.
And what I found among my clients, I don't know that they all have ADHD. I've just recently discovered that I probably do. Yeah. But this rejection sensitive dysphoria makes me, I would say, hypersensitive, hyper like alert to any kind of criticism. And I don't know if I can't empirically say that I'm like more sensitive than everyone else, right? Like, I don't know what this is, a spectrum, right? But I have noticed that there are people in my life that, you know, you could tell them that they looked fat and it would roll right off them,
right?
But for me, if you say that to me, I'll be thinking about that probably for a year or so, maybe longer, right?
It's really interesting. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So it does call into question whether or not there are certain personality types or, you know, just certain types who are more sensitive to the words of others impacting how we feel about ourselves.
Like we said earlier, I feel like there's such a huge range of where people fall. It's just important to be self-aware, to work on the process of self-awareness.
And maybe be aware that even if you're not the sensitive one, or there could be people close to you that are super sensitive. So watch what you say.
I know. Oh, my husband is one of those guys where it just rolls off. Yeah. I mean, you could tell him anything. And goodness gracious. Well, I'm curious. You said that you work with clients. What is your role? Like, what do you call yourself in that kind of relationship?
Yeah. I call myself a coach because I'm not a certified eating disorder specialist. I'm not a counselor or psychologist. But I'm probably more of like a spiritual, and that word is weird for some, but I'm helping in a more of discipleship kind of role where I'm guiding women to kind of get to some of the spiritual issues that are underneath their body image issues. And we're just talking through things and working through things and, you know, taking it one step at a time on a journey, because that's really what it is. There's not a switch you can flip and it's like, oh, I figured that out. Boom. I never think about my body again. It's a journey. And I walk with them through, you know, the testings of that journey, right? Like trying on a swimsuit in the summer or showing up at a big family event that before you would have made sure you lost 20 pounds before attending, you know, those kind of things. We just journey together to find more freedom.
That's powerful because like you were saying earlier, it is so holistic. And I think just like with a lot of things in life, we try to hone in on one thing, but really it's like a web and it's so important. So I've actually never heard of anyone have that role. And so I love that we all know that now. It's great. And hopefully we support your business for the next few years through this community.
Bring it on.
Well, I want to talk about your workbook a little bit because, again, I'm sure as we're listening, we're curious about next steps. We're curious about this journey for ourselves a little bit more. Talk to us about what to expect from the 40-day body image workbook. Yes. Words are hard, but there we go.
Yes. And the 40-day body image workbook is not really phonetically fantastic.
It's okay.
So my 40-day body image workbook is a journey. Like all my books, I like to say that it's a journey. I guess I'm just stuck on journeys because I feel like there is a process to everything, right? There's an undoing and unlearning, and then there's a relearning. Now, this is a faith-based workbook. So I'm taking women really on a journey to explore like why they believe what they do believe about their bodies and their worth. So we're looking at really what the culture says about being body positive or being body neutral. Those are some buzz terms. Body neutrality, body positivity is, you know, something that's out there in socials world. We're looking at those things. We're looking at food. Questioning diet culture and really what it's done to us, how it's, I'm going to say, disturbed a healthy relationship with food for most of us. And then we're just analyzing, like I said, those lies that we hear, where did they come from? And so every day of the book, there is some narrative to read, kind of a teaching from me with some stories. And I appreciate humor, so I try to be funny because this is kind of a heavy topic. And so if it's approached in a real heavy-handed way, I think it's too difficult. Yeah. So I try to keep it light and funny, but at the same time, I want you to hear the truth. And so there's a little bit of narrative from me and then some questions to dig into and sometimes some exercises, sometimes some like really practical exercises, like, look, let's go get in your closet and figure out why you're still holding onto that dress from 25 years ago. Like those kind of things that we all struggle with. We all do, but hopefully it's practical. It's 40 days. So it's tangible. Do this every day. Although some days you may need to sit with like the topic of the day for longer, but it's a doable way to really start your body image freedom journey.
I love this. And this was not intentional, but I love that this episode is kind of coming out the first quarter of the year. And I think, I mean, it becomes almost a joke every year, every January 1st, people searching for a new way to eat, searching to lose the weight. And it's like, then you fall off the train, right? Well, yeah, train.
The wagon. Yeah.
and whatever it is. And then you jump back on the next year and there's never freedom. It just becomes this, I keep saying rat race, but like rat chase.
Treadmill that never stops.
Yes. Thank you. Exactly. And I think as we hear this, I hope what we're all hearing is freedom. And it's not, you're not promoting a diet type. You're not, we didn't even talk about different types of food, you know, today necessarily. It's a different conversation and it's timely and it's refreshing. And so I think even though there is the aspect of faith, I know a lot of us are followers of Jesus Christian, but I would imagine it's still something that everyone could relate to and walk through, right? That we could still apply to our lives. Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, there's scriptures in there that you can look up, but the exercises that I have for you to do, I think any person would benefit from doing them.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Wow. Well, I'm going to link that in our show notes, along with the links to your website and socials and all of that. And so we can all run to you for counsel and next steps. But I want to end the conversation with the same three questions that we ask all of our guests. And I would love to hear yours as well, if my computer will cooperate. Okay. Something you have eaten recently and loved.
Oh, goodness. So many things. Eaten recently and loved. You know what? I'm in a habit of buying fresh French bread from the grocery store recently. That's a new habit, but it's a dollar. You can't buy anything at the grocery store for a dollar anymore. And it's just good. It goes bad if you don't eat it by the next day. So it's wonderful.
Gotta eat it fast.
Yep. I feel like I'm French doing it.
I remember, so I asked this question to everyone and I have for years, and I interviewed the chef Jacques Pepin. And I asked him at the end, what's your favorite thing that you've eaten? And I was expecting like caviar or something. And he was like, bread and butter or whatever. It's his favorite. And there's nothing like a good loaf of bread. I have a fond memory of my Italian nonna. He would get a loaf of Italian bread. My sister would stick her hand down the middle, pull out the dough. She'd eat the dough. He'd eat the crust. And they would share the bread. So it's
love
really
it.
Sweet.
Mm-hmm. Love it.
Okay. A gathering you attended that made you feel a strong sense of belonging. And if you could pinpoint it, what it was that made you feel that way.
You know, I love hosting Christmas parties. And we moved to this town about almost 6 years ago. And this was probably the first year that we hosted a Christmas party where it was like, wow, I feel like I have friends now. You know, I didn't have friends before, but there's a process, right?
Yeah.
Take 1,000 hours or something like that for someone to become a good friend. And so, I would say that party was just really enjoyable to finally feel like I was surrounded by women. I mean, you know, there were men there too, but the women especially who knew me, who really knew me.
That's a really good, just like a relatable nugget for so many of us. If you're in a community for around that amount of time, around the 5-year point, I've heard that before, but it could feel so frustrating as you're waiting for it.
Absolutely.
But if you're intentional, if you're pursuing it, it does click. It just takes a while in our society right now.
Yeah.
And there are communities where it does, it's like a pressure, more like a pressure cooker for relationships, like military communities, missions communities. Those tend to birth relationships faster, but usually it's slower. So I am glad you have that. It's important. It makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
Last question is a new favorite of mine, and it's a fun one. Something you've discovered recently that you think everyone should know about. Amazon purchase, Netflix show, anything.
Oh, this is so embarrassing, but not because I think your audience might relate to it. So I'm in perimenopause. But it is this ice ring that goes around your neck. And you keep it in the freezer. So think like teething ring for a baby that you keep in the freezer. This is a ring and it looks like a horseshoe and you put it around the back of your neck. And I've just noticed that like that's the place I get hot now. I never used to get hot there. I used to, you know, sweat from my forehead. And now I sweat from the back of my neck. So it's this ice ring that you can put on while you're blow drying your hair, or putting on makeup. And it's the best $14 I think I ever spent on Amazon.
That is genius.
It really is.
I've never seen that. I'll link that in the notes as well, because like you said, I'm sure there's a bunch of people that would be relieved to hear about that. Wow. You're so right. Just on Amazon?
Amazon, yeah. And I will say, it said that it would last like 2 or 3 hours, and I melt through it in about 20 minutes. So I actually have two of them. You know, 10 years ago, I know I was getting hot blow drying my hair. Like that was always a time when I would get hot getting ready. So...
That is genius.
Yeah, it's kind of cool.
Look at you. You're a beauty influencer now. So fun. Okay. Well, I am going to link all of your links in the show notes, but where do you want to send people if they're looking right now?
Yeah. They can go to improvebodyimage.com.
Well, that's a great URL that you got your hands on. Whenever you hear a good URL, I'm like, congratulations, you acted fast, because they're hard to come by.
Yes.
Well, that is great. Thank you so much. This is definitely, like we said, a hard conversation to have, but I'm glad we had it. And I hope that there is freedom for all of us on the other side of this lifelong process, right?
For sure.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
We will see you next week.